The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Yes, it's me again. It's the guy with the giant head on your computer screen. It's Tuesday. No, it's not Tuesday. It's Thursday, February 22nd, 2024. It's 11 p.m. on the East Coast of the United States, 8 p.m. on the West Coast, 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia. And here where I'm sitting in Northeast Minneapolis, it's 10 p.m. Central Time. I'm Jim Peters. Welcome to another edition of Jim Peters at Night. Episode number 89. Yeah, we're approaching 100. Who would know it? You know. Hope you guys had a good day today. I tell you, we've had the strangest winter ever. It was 51 degrees here today. Now it's the middle of February, and that's to say that's unusual is a understatement. It snowed here about 6 inches, about half a foot, about a week ago, and that snow is pretty much gone. It's definitely going to be gone by Monday for sure. It's supposed to be in the upper 40s most of the weekend, and it's supposed to be 55 on Monday, which is just, it's crazy. We basically have not had a winter, basically. Like my wife was saying, it's probably going to be 100 degrees all summer. You know, that's the thing. If you've never been in Minnesota, of course, we have a reputation of being the icebox of the nation, and that's true. But on the other hand, summers here get quite hot. We usually have about a dozen days over 90 degrees. I think we set a record this last summer. I think we had like 20 or 22. It was pretty bad. And no, don't give me this shit about global warming. Well, actually, global warming's real. It's climate change isn't real. So what I mean by climate change is the fact that humans are affecting it. No, global warming is real. The world's been warming up for 300 years. That's true. But I want to point out that the first half of those 300 years, there was no industrialization on the planet. None. And it warmed up anyway. Geez, I wonder why. Nature? The sun? Actually, here's the reason. Now, we had Patrick Moore on the show in October or November. I can't remember. It's still the most watched episode of the show thus far. He was the climatologist who was one of the founders of Greenpeace. And yeah, he was in the rubber boats chasing around and trying to save the whales, all that sort of stuff. And he quit Greenpeace because he decided that it was becoming a money-grubbing organization, which he's right. He thought that basically all organizations that become that large basically end up living just for money. And that's my experience. But also because of the fact that he's a trained climatologist, a scientist. And he said he came to the realization that global warming was complete crap. And he's written a book about it. It's called, oh God, it has a really weird title. It's on our blog at jimandnight.com. We have a link to it. But at any rate, I mean, he pointed, you know, so I'm going to get into this because we're talking about it. The primary reason the world's actually warming up has to do with the wobble of the Earth's revolution around the sun. And it's determined by the other major planets in the solar system, pretty much the same way the moon determines the tides on Earth. So you got Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus. Actually, all the planets have an effect, but those are the three big ones. And they pull and tug and push on the orbit of the Earth. The orbit of the Earth around the sun is not uniform. It isn't. So sometimes we're closer, sometimes we're farther, and that, on a long-term basis, determines whether the world is warming up or cooling down. That's the thing. Now, you may say, oh, my God, it's terrible. You know, Battery Park, New York City is going to be underwater. But there's another, the downside to that, too, is that we've had three ice ages on this planet, and one was only 10,000 years ago. And those of you who know anything about your history, you know the Egyptians only started their civilization about 7,000 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. And in the 1970s, there was a whole bunch of scientists who were saying, we're heading toward another ice age. You know, so I, you know, it might, you might want to count your blessings in the fact that the world's warming up. But no, the world is warming up. That's global warming. That's true. Climate change is bullshit. Okay, you got that from me. If I accomplish, there's two things I want to accomplish with this show. Well, three. One is I want to give voice to a whole bunch of interesting people. And we have been blessed so far to have a whole bunch of really good guests on the show. We're batting way above our station. I got to tell you, we are. We had Michael Harrison on for World Radio Day. He was the guy, the point man for the UN, the United Nations. He came on the show. It's like, okay, fine. That's good. You know, now tonight, our guest is Mark Tapscott. He's the congressional correspondent for the Epoch Times. And I've said this a million times. I didn't even say this during the interview. We taped this interview this afternoon. That the Epoch Times and the Wall Street Journal are the only two newspapers in America worth paying for anymore. I really do believe that. And we don't link to the Epoch Times because, like the Wall Street Journal, once you get past the front, everything past the front page is behind the paywall. So that you can, unless you're a subscriber, you can't access it. You can access the front page, and that's it. And, of course, you know, to sign up. That's all. But anyway, so he's been doing this gig for 40 years. He's 70 years old. He's 2 years older than me. I told him during the, I hope he wasn't insulted. I think he's the only guest I have on the show regularly who's older than I am, but not by much either. You know, he looks pretty damn good, you know, but at any rate, he knows everybody in Congress pretty much on a first name basis. So we get the scoop from him. And also, he isn't afraid to give us his opinion either, as some other people. You know, I appreciate the journalists who come on this program who actually don't just want to stick to, they don't want to be pinned down to what they actually personally think. And I actually think that's great because there's too many people. And we actually talk about this during the interview. Journalism doesn't really exist anymore. It's advocacy. You got a whole bunch of reporters. They're right out of college. They're all social justice warriors. Yeah, we're going to change the world. Fuck you. You are not. old man cynicism, you know. Yeah, I'm pretty much the only reason I'm not like Biden is that I'm maybe a little more cogent, but I'm just as angry. I'm just an old angry guy. Christ. All right, so that's tonight. We take Fridays off here. If you've never seen the show, it's Monday through Thursday at 11 o'clock Eastern live. And those of you who watch this live, I appreciate it. That's a good thing. So next Monday, it's our month in review panel, which we do the last Monday of every month. Don Zorro, Tim Conaway, and Larry Newman usually joins us, but he won't be there tomorrow on Monday. So I'm trying to find somebody else to fill in. If not, I shoot the shit with those two guys. It's good. They're good. They know how to do it. So, and then we're taking the West of next week off. So we're coming back on March 6th? It's Monday, March 6th. So that's what we got going on here. Now, you can call into the show. I hope you do. You see this right down here? Okay, there's three ways to call in. First of all, according to Talkers Magazine, this is the first talk show in America that takes video phone calls. And we do. And it's really simple. This is not, you don't have to make a big production out of this. It's very simple. You can do it on your phone even, just like a FaceTime call. And this sounds weird, but this is the way you work. You fire the browser up on your cell phone or your laptop or wherever you're at and go to gymatnight.com/call, that address right there. There's a giant big blue button at the top of the page. You press that button. You're in the preview screen. You get to check your camera and mic, or if you have more than one camera or mic on your device, you can choose one. From the drop-down menu. And you can also choose no video if you want to mute your camera, but there's no reason to do that anymore. I'll get to that in a second. And you press the join button at the bottom, and you're in the queue. It's really simple. I ask everybody who does this, who calls up, was it hard? No. It's actually easier than making a FaceTime call, and it's way easier than making it than a Zoom meeting. It's not even close to that hard. So if you want to call up your camera, but I do have to remind you, I mean, I know this is stupid, but you have to understand this. Your face will be on the air. So, you know, the 15 people watching this right now, they will see you, okay? But I think that's not, I don't think that's a bad thing. You're all just trolling bastards anyway. Now, okay, the audio number right here, 563-999-3435. You can call up now. This is relatively new, starting at the beginning of this month. You can call that number and come on audio only with your phone. You don't remember how to use a phone, right? It's unbelievable. No one talks on the phone anymore. It's like, Jesus, yeah. Well, your cell phone actually can make phone calls. Did you know that? So, yeah, if you want to call up, that's audio only. Of course, there's no picture, you know. And I got a screen off the side here, and your number comes up, and I put you on. Or you can text in this number right here. You can text me while we're on the air. I get these text messages. That's also on the screen off to my side here. 408-458-5088. And I get those in real time. So now we broadcast on 7 platforms video and on Blog Talk Radio live audio. That's at blogtalkradio.com. Remember, they supply the telephone number we used for the call-in, which is very nice of them. But so my point is, what is my point? Oh, this is my point. Just a fucking idiot. What are we doing? My point is that on most of the platforms where we're broadcasting live, there's chat screens and you can chat, but I don't see them. I just want to make sure you know that. Also, you can't see each other. So if you're on Rumble chatting, you won't see the people who are chatting on YouTube or vice versa or Twitch or whatever the hell it is. But if you want a list of all the places we broadcast and the links to them, you can go to geminite.com/watch. There's that's at the top menu. You'll find it. And that's a link to all the pages where we broadcast live. So we have it. I'm going to, matter of fact, that's one of the things I had on the do list. You think I'm taking the rest 3 days, but I got work to do. So I need to update the watch page. We haven't added Blog Talk Radio. Been pretty new. But I do watch the texts. That's the thing. So everybody can text in. So that's the number for the text, 408-458-5088. For the audio phone calls, it's 563-999-3435. And to get on with your camera, it's jim@night.com/call. You got that? Now, I have to, I owe you a little bit of an apology. We had some problems with Blog Talk Radio this Monday and Tuesday. And Monday, they were completely offline, so we didn't even broadcast our show. Tuesday, I'm in the middle of doing a show, and I get a call. Joe calls in, and if you're listening, Joe, once again, I apologize last night, too. Sorry about this. I did not cut you off. We were having a very nice conversation, and the whole system blew up. It just quit. It tanked on us right in the middle of the phone call, and we never got back on. So the reason I'm bringing that up is because I don't know if you guys have heard this. There was AT&T had a major outage today for their cell phone service across the United States. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm wondering, I've been working on the internet for 30 years. Back in the 1990s, when literally there were only 400 or 500 commercial websites on the internet, I was working on it. And I've come to have a kind of a feel for when things kind of go cuckooey. And I'm starting to think that maybe somebody's hacking something somewhere, that the infrastructure might be kind of. So Blog Talk Radio was down. Now, maybe that's just them. I don't know. On Monday, they did put up a construction page, a maintenance page. So maybe I'm just reading into this. AT&T is down. There are people who thought earlier today that also Verizon and T-Mobile were having problems, but that turned out not to be true. It was just that people calling from AT&T to Verizon and AT&T and T-Mobile phones weren't getting through. So they thought there was something wrong with those, but no, it turned out that wasn't true at all. But on the other hand, what also happened on Monday and Tuesday, which is kind of funny if you ask me, and we got to get Jazz Shaw back on our show. He's a reporter for Salem Media Properties. He reports on both politics and sci-fi stuff, and also the UFO stuff. That he's a UFO guy for Salem Media. But at any rate, and we're going to get to this in just a second too. He wrote an article for The Debrief, which is a very, very high-tech website, about the fact that, the government is still lying about UFOs. And basically, at this point, we have proof. But at any rate, so the reason I'm bringing that up is Jazz uses ChatGPT. He's a subscriber. And I don't know if you know this, if you ever tried it. You can get use ChatGPT for free, but basically it's so overwhelmed with traffic you can't get in. I've never been able to get in. I gave up. But he has a subscription. If you pay, you have priority access, and he does. But the reason I'm bringing that up is on Monday and Tuesday, apparently ChatGPT went completely off the rails. it was spewing just nonsense for 2 days, and apparently some of it was quite funny too. It was putting out stuff that didn't make sense. It was putting out links to websites that didn't exist. It just completely blew up. And I'm starting to wonder, after 30 years of doing this, I'm starting to wonder if something's going on. You know, there's the press this afternoon or this evening, people are starting to speculate, geez, did we get hacked by the Chinese or whatever? You know, well, I got to tell you, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't. The internet is a strange thing. You have to understand it's completely decentralized. I remember years and years ago, my father-in-law, God bless his soul, rest in peace, we were trying to explain to him what the internet was. And he said, well, where's the headquarters? And I said, there isn't one. And he said, no, there has to be. Where's the headquarters? And finally, my wife just blurted out Atlanta just to get him to shut up. But, you know, it's a decentralized network. The internet was started as part of the U.S. military, so the military can communicate with each other, and it's deliberately designed so that if one of the nodes of connections goes out, the traffic automatically reroutes. That's the reason there is no headquarters for the internet, you know? So that from that sense, the internet's kind of hard to hack. But there's 7 servers located in various parts of the United States. And I know this because I know one of them is actually here in Minneapolis, and I actually know where it is. And that's supposed to be a secret, but these are called the master DNS servers, the master DNS servers. So the thing is, when you type in a domain URL, like jimandnight.com, that actually translates to a number, the IP address. So the thing is, so the domain name system was grafted onto the IP number system to make it easier for people to get around. And there's 7 servers in the United States that handle that translation. So if you type in jimandnight.com, I got to admit, I don't off the top of my head know what the IP number is for a server. I don't know. But if you type in jimandnight.com, your request gets routed to the nearest server that's up and running anyway, and usually they always are. I guess that's the point here that I'm getting at. And it translates that domain name into the IP number address, and then routes your traffic. That's the way it works. So the thing is, if you're gonna hack the internet, quote unquote, if you're gonna hack the internet, usually what you try to do is hack one of those 7 servers. But once again, the internet is designed so if one of those servers goes down, the traffic goes over to the next closest one geographically. So it'd be tough to shut the whole thing down, but you can really fuck it up. I mean, anyone who knows what they're doing could do this, and I think the Chinese probably do. And I mean, this is entirely speculation, but I just have the feeling over the last few days that somebody's been fucking with something. And I might be wrong, but I have to tell you, in the past, I haven't been, so I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Speaking of all this, and maybe you read this, made the news too, about the fact that Google released on Monday the test beta for a new AI program they have called Gemini. So they released it, you know, here, you know, try this out, test this. Well, people very quickly realize that it can generate images, you know, and apparently it doesn't know what a white Caucasian male is because no one could get it to generate one. And if you actually ask for, give me a picture of a white Caucasian male, it will spit back text to you that's saying, well, that's really racist, and we're not going to do that. I read the text that spits out, but that's basically what it says. So, but people try to work around and say, well, you know, like for example, I just think this is nuts. So somebody asked it, all right, give me a picture of an NFL quarterback. And it says, sure, here's a picture of a diverse NFL quarterback. Here's diversity. And it was an Asian woman in a football uniform. No fucking lie. Okay, so this goes on for a while. Nate Silver over at 538, and, you know, he's a good liberal guy, you know. He's on the liberal side. At first, he thought he didn't believe this. So he said, I'm going to do some checking around. So he went and tried it. He came back on Twitter and he said, yeah, they're right. Yeah, I can't get a white Caucasian male out of it either. And nobody could. And finally, it was really weird. Was it a softball game or volleyball? It was something. And I remember the volleyball thing because, you know, volleyball is one of the few sports in America that's primarily predominantly female, that and softball, frankly, you know. And I think they got pictures of white men playing volleyball, but that was like it. I mean, people tried, and finally Google came back and said, well, we're sorry, it's all fucked up. they took it offline. Now I can laugh at this and you can laugh at this, but the fact is, you know, and I talked about this a few days ago. I can't remember, was last week or on Monday or something, about the fact that, I mean, there's people who are saying that that AI has the ability in 2 to 10 years to actually start killing people, humans. And that's not, and you know, my first reaction to that is, or I would say my adolescent probably being like when I was 55, you know, it's just they're scare tactics, or people are just being overly afraid or whatever. But now after, you know, Trump derangement syndrome, I don't doubt anything anymore. I was going to say, so another thing that happened the last few days, which I haven't had a chance to talk about, is the fact that there's that the whistleblower that now we got to make sure I get this right. The whistleblower for the people who said that the Ukrainians paid the Biden family $10 million has now been indicted by the FBI because they say this guy lied, even though supposedly he was always touted as a highly credible source. And at this point, I got to admit, I don't believe he's lying. I think the administration will do absolutely anything to cover their butt, anything. And I just don't believe it. Now, the terrible thing about that is I don't believe anything. You know, that's the terrible. This is where we've gotten. It's gotten to the point where, you know, the General Accounting Office and the budget, or what is it called? The Bureau of Labor Statistics, right. The Bureau of, you know, that compile the numbers monthly for the American economy. I'm starting not to believe those numbers either. I've become so cynical, both doing this, and I'm the previous editor of Punk News for 3 years, and I was out of the journalism business for a long, long time. I don't consider what I'm doing here journalism, folks. This is not journalism. I'm a guy just yakking on the radio and on YouTube here for 90 minutes. That's what I'm doing. So this is not true. No, I'm not trying to fool anybody here. This is not journalism. But when I got into the editing at Conk News about 3.5-4 years ago now, I was skeptical, and I'd like to think I was somewhat hardened and surely cynical. But since I have seen so much shit go down the past 3-4 years, I mean, basically, I can't stress this to you enough. The government is lying. Everybody in the government is lying to you. And I'm not just talking about, you know, this is a conservative-oriented program. I'm not just talking about liberals. The Republicans are lying to you, too. Everybody basically is lying to you. I don't have sitting politicians on this program. We do not invite them because all they do is lie. They will just lie just to get reelected. That's it. They will say whatever they think you want to hear, It's all bullshit, and I won't even have them on. I won't even bother. You know, when I did radio shows and podcasts for Calling News, in that 3 years, I had only one sitting politician on the entire time. And that was a very unusual circumstance. I'm not going to get into what that was. It was a very unusual a bill that somebody was proposing. And yeah, that was it. He was the only single person in 4 years that I've been doing this. I won't do it. I'd make an exception for Trump. I'd love to interview Trump, and I have questions for him that no one has ever asked him. That's the reason. But and Trump is not a sitting politician, but I include people running for office in that too. Nikki Haley, no, wouldn't bother, you know. Dean Phillips, who's running for president. Robert F. Kennedy, maybe, because he's a really, really interesting guy. But still, I just like, you know, I don't, and I have a, it's interesting, and Jeff Meyer, and we'll run the Punk News is now the sponsor of this program. Jeff Meyer and I have talked about this before. Robert F. Kennedy and Tulsi Gabbard hold kind of a special place in American politics because even though I don't agree with most of the policies either one of them espouse, I would have no trouble with either one of them being president because I'll be honest, I trust their judgment. And when I mean judgment, I'm talking about like if push comes to shove and somebody needs to push a button for a war, I would trust their ability to push it or not push it and when to push it. That's the thing. I do. I just think, you know, and I have a friend of mine, very liberal friend of mine, who said he couldn't support Robert F. Kennedy because of his stance on the vaccines. So that's, you know, all right. You're never going to find a politician you agree with 100%. You just aren't, you know. So I have, if in some alternate universe where Robert F. Kennedy won the presidency, I have no trouble with that at all. None. Certainly it's way, way preferable to Joe Biden winning again. No question, you know. So, and Tulsi Gabbard, same thing. It's like, you know, she's actually quite liberal in her policies. For example, she supports universal basic income, which I do not. Although, that said, I think there's and you know, you guys don't want to hear this, want to hear about this at all. There's, I think in the future, there's a possibility. If you're going to do something like that, you don't want to do universal basic income. You want to do negative income tax. That's what Milton Friedman suggested back in the 1960s. So that, okay, here's the difference. Universal basic income, everybody in America gets $1,000 a month if you're over like 18 or something like that. Now that's bullshit. We can't afford to do that. We go broke in a year. You know, the whole country would default. But negative income tax is this sort of thing. If your income is above a certain level, you pay income tax. If it's below a certain level, the government pays you a proportionate amount. Got that? That's doable. And I think we might have a problem here. I don't think it's going to be in my lifetime. I hope not. But things seem to happen faster than they always think. That we're going to have a problem with unemployment. I think there's a good possibility that AI and the computerization and the technology on the planet is going to put many, many people not only out of work, but they're going to be unable to find a job. And when you I could see this to the point where half the people of working the stamina and age in the United States don't find employment. And you know what happens when you have a whole bunch of people who don't have anything to do? Crime. So at that point, it might be worth the trouble to give them some money. Now, I know if, you know, that makes me the worst conservative on the planet. I understand that. I know. But pragmatism, you know, you have to, you know, anyway, if you, yeah, you can call them and tell me what you think. But, you know, you can't do this very second because right now I'm going to run a commercial. Well, actually, let's call it an endorsement. Okay. All right. So we got, oh, man, I got a little bit of bug in the system here. Here we go. There we go. Now I'm over here now. I'm over here. All right. This is the front page of Calling News. So Calling News is a news aggregator. The page just flipped over. And that's really interesting because here's the deal. So every 3 hours, by algorithm, they have servers that go out and collect news from 75 different news sources, and they lay them out on the front page. There are some other pages here you can see at the top of they're at the menu, but really it's a one-page website for all practical purposes. So 75 news sources contribute articles to Conk News, and the algorithm and the servers grab it all, lay it out. All these photos here, you have a Vice logo on the left there. That's from hotair.com, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. Vice News is pretty much almost going out of business, and that does not surprise me based on what I know. But anyway, the photos are from the articles that they're referencing. The headlines are not rewritten. They're the headlines of the articles, and if you click either a photo or a headline, you go directly to that article on that website. Now, I don't know if you can see below the Vice logo there. There's a tiny little logo in the corner on the left there. That's the Hot Air logo. If you click on the little logo, you go to the front page of the website. But so those are it references. You can see where the articles are from. If you're a news junkie, you can't get any better take of the news than this. You just can't. And it's free, totally free. You know, they run some advertising. There's some advertising on this page, but it's free for you to use. I use this all the time. I used to work there. It's a great resource. I say if you're a news junkie, it's like a sexual experience, and it is. And of course, you know, I'm 68, so how would I remember? I don't know. I have no idea. Anyway, check that out. It's at conk.com, conk.com. Okay? All right. So now I'm going to play the interview we did with Mark Tapscott this afternoon. And when we come back, the way this program works, you've never watched it before, I do about a half-hour monologue like we just kind of did. And then we interview a guest, usually live, not always, but especially the people on the East Coast, it's 11:30 at night there. Most of them don't want to do a live interview, so we offer to do them in the afternoon. It's always the day of. So then we do an interview, the half hour to an hour long. And then after that, we have the C block, and I talk about usually paranormal shit, science stuff, UFO stuff, that sort of stuff. That's what we talk about. So that's the layout of the show. And Mark Tapscott's going to come on now. And believe me, you're going to like this. This is pretty cool. Here we go. Joining us from his home in Washington, D.C., congressional correspondent for the Epoch Times, Mark Tapscott. Nice to see you, Mark. Literally.
You too, good to be here.
We've always done this by phone before, so it's very nice to see you.
Yeah.
So how's things on a scale of 1 to 2?
Well, on a scale of 1 to 2, about 1.5, because Congress is on recess.
Yeah. So, so let me ask you about that. When Congress is on recess, are you still hunting around trying to get information, or?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, actually, the Senate is still around, but the House is on recess.
So I have, here's my first question. Hold on a second. I'm so fucking organized. Robert Hur comes out with this report. Everybody blows up. You know, it's on all over the news. First of all, as far as you can tell, how bad is Joe Biden off physically?
Well, I haven't had any direct personal contact with him because I don't cover the White House. But
but
I have to say that when I've read Hur's comments in the report, I wasn't surprised because, I mean, everybody in America has seen, all of the video of the president stumbling on the stairs up to Air Force One and falling down on the stage at the Air Force Academy. I mean, that's been happening a long time. So I doubt, frankly, that anybody was surprised. They certainly should not have been.
And why aren't the Democrats? Well, I don't know. I'm making a presumption here. I shouldn't. Are the Democrats going to do something about this?
I think they are. You know, they're not gonna come right out and say it, but you just got too many comments in the last month, you know, from former Obama campaign people, for example.
Yeah.
Saying, and even James Carville, saying this is not going to work. And my feeling has been, my guess has been for some time now that assuming something doesn't happen prior to the Democratic convention, there will be a speech or an announcement or something just before the convention or at the opening of the convention that he's decided not to pursue a second term and free his delegates. So it could become a wild, wide open convention.
And do you think, is he going to make this announcement himself, or is he just a cranky old man and refuses to step down?
I don't know. My guess is he's a cranky old man. He's been a cranky old man as long as he's been in Washington.
Yes, he has, hasn't he? That's true. Yeah. I know. He was a cranky young man, and now he's a cranky old man.
Yeah.
Do you think the Chicago convention is going to go down like 68?
Well, let's hope not. You know, 68 was, my goodness, that was
something.
A lot of violence in the streets, and, you know, a lot of people got hurt. A lot of Chicago policemen got hurt. I would be surprised if it is. You know, I suspect that maybe if Biden takes some kind of action that the far-left loonies that love Hamas and death think is too much, you might see some violence from that, but I wouldn't expect it otherwise.
All right, now I'm going to fast forward 1,000 years. So I was reading, I can't remember online who said this, so somebody said, it doesn't matter who wins in November, the left is going to riot anyway.
Well,
you know, do you think there's something to that?
Absolutely. I absolutely do. If Trump is reelected or is elected, you can count on it, yeah.
Yeah, but Biden, I mean, like you were talking about the Hamas thing, they don't like him on that either.
Well, they don't, but, you know, they have to, they would think, well, we got to give him a chance, you know, now, and give
uh-huh.
him a week or two, and then they would riot.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what happened. Yeah. All right, so let me move on here. The Mayorkas impeachment thing. So, okay. Well, this is not going to go through. So the question is it worth the trouble that they did this?
Jim, that's the big question that everybody is, well, maybe not everybody, but lots of Republicans anyway on the Hill in both the Senate and the House have debated for some time because, you know, on the one hand, you have folks like the chairman of Homeland Security, Congressman Mark Green from Tennessee, who insists that, look, the record is clear, it's voluminous, and it's persuasive that for whatever reason, Secretary Mayorkas violated his oath of office by not enforcing federal law as written by the Congress and signed into law by whichever president happened to be in office at the time. And you cannot let that go without being held accountable. So whatever the Senate does, that's up to the Senate. The House has a responsibility to impeach, and that's what they did. On the other hand, the obvious common sense response is the Democrats control the Senate, and there are a number of Republicans who will vote with the Democrats. So there's no way you're going to get a conviction. He's going to continue to be the secretary. So why waste the time? And frankly, I think both of those arguments are persuasive, but in my own view, just my own personal view.
Yes, please.
Why have an impeachment clause in the Constitution? Why have an oath of office if you're not going to hold office holders to account for it? That's just my view, you know.
Mark, you're more of a constitutional scholar than me. But the way I understand this, somebody brought this up like on one of the cable channels or something, that incompetence is not a reason for impeachment, but the election of duty is.
Yes.
I mean, it appears I don't know, I won't say to everybody, but at least to me, that this is willful, you know, that they're actually, you know. So, I mean, in that sense, I think it's legitimate. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know either. But, but let me ask you another question. Mm-hmm. So, now, I'm quite convinced, you know, one of the other things is that Mayorkas isn't driving this. So, now I'm going ahead five steps again. Who is? Who in the White House is actually setting the policy here?
Whoever is telling the president what to do.
Yeah, and you don't know who that is, huh?
I have a guess. I think Jeff Zients, the chief of staff, and he consults daily, I'm sure, with a number of former Obama inner circle types. They go through the motions. He is the guy who has the title of President of the United States, and they have to acknowledge that. But you know, every president depends to a great deal on his staff because the job is so big. So it's not, you would be surprised if a president was not depending on his staff to a great
right.
deal, you know.
Are we going to find out 50 years from now that basically Obama was the Wizard of Oz here, pulling the strings behind the scenes?
Why would you think it would take 50 years?
Oh, I don't know. Because I'm stupid. I don't really know.
No. I mean, any way you look at it, and Biden had something. Don't forget. He deferred to Hillary Clinton in 2016.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody assumed that he was going to run, and then he surprised a lot of people by saying, no, I'm not. I'm not going to run.
Right.
And I would be dumbfounded if at some point early on in the process for the 2020 campaign, the Obama people and Biden and you know, whoever he has in his own inner circle, got together and said, okay, here's how we're going to do this. And they functioned like that. I mean, that's the way political campaigns and presidential administrations, that's kind of the basic model for them.
Do you think, Mark, that the Democrats are generally more organized than the Republicans? It sometimes seems like that.
It's not so much that they're more organized. It's that they are meaner, tougher, and less concerned about the spirit of the law.
Yeah, now I have a couple of people come on once a month here. We call them the dynamic duo. They always come on together. But we were talking about this last night. But on I totally buy what you're saying. But on the other hand, it does seem like what's going on here is going to come back to bite them in the ass. I mean, I don't know how much foresight is involved here, or is anybody playing a long game ever? Am I just like
when you say bite them in the posterior end? Are you referring to the Democrats?
Yeah, that this whole thing's going to come back to bite them in the butt, right?
I pray, you know.
Yeah.
I've been in Washington since 1976.
I know. That's why I love talking to you.
Well, in the judgment of some people, that makes me an old fart, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm an old fart, but you might be the only, no offense, you might be the only person that ever comes on this show that's actually older than me, so.
Uh-oh.
You know, I think by 2 years, but.
You know, it's just, American politics for the last 30 years has had a fundamental double standard, thanks primarily to the mainstream media, the journalists. Democrats are treated differently than Republicans are. you really began to see this with the Iran-Contra scandal and Reagan back in 87.
Uh-huh.
You'll recall that coverage pretty much assumed that Reagan knew, Reagan was responsible, and Reagan was therefore criminally responsible. Now, what he was responsible for was never all that clear.
That's true. And that's the reason I have a hard time buying it, but whatever, go ahead.
But that was the standard, you know.
Yeah.
And it's progressed from that point to today. Basically, all Democrats have to do is say the name Donald Trump, and you know what the next sentence is going to be. Guilty.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And I'm, you know, I think I'm simply observing what any open-minded person has been able to see for a long time. There is this double standard at work.
Yes. You have any thoughts on this $355 million judgment that just came down? I mean, if you know, I'm interviewing you, but I'll tell you, I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. But
well, it's unconstitutional. You know.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It violates the Eighth Amendment, and it clearly does.
Right.
If it was in any state other than New York, other than California, you know, I would think that the next court up, the next appeals court level up, the judges involved would look at this one and say, what on earth was he thinking, and throw it out. You know, but it's New York, so you don't know. And it's going to depend, I think, ultimately on how quickly Trump can get it to the Supreme Court, assuming he can get it to the Supreme Court.
Well, talking about coming out to bite people in the ass, so I had Jeff Meyer on. He's a businessman, and I was asking him about this, about the fact that my thing about this judgment is that I think they've really done a disservice to business in New York State in general.
Yeah,
because if I had a business in New York, I'd pull it out. Now, Jeff said, and he's right, I know on a pragmatic level, he said the majority of businesses can't move. You know, that's basically right. It's true. You know, you're basically stuck. But on the other hand, I think about the fact that maybe the minority of them can and will, and maybe a lot of them wouldn't move, but it might be enough to fuck your tax base up. And
well,
so
that's the point. That's
yeah.
The point.
And then once again, what are they thinking?
Well, you know, it's the biggest businesses that have the most ability to transfer operations, or to do like Elon Musk did, transfer his corporate filing from Delaware to Texas. There's a bunch of corporations in New York that can do that, and if they do it, and frankly, I'm not persuaded that they won't. New York is gonna feel it.
Yeah, I can't. If you were a CEO of one of these major corporations, also, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people would assume it's the smaller businesses that would move. But I think you're right. The larger businesses actually have a more chance and a better opportunity to actually do it.
Yeah.
The small businesses are kind of strapped.
Not only that, but their most likely alternative is go out of business and retire and move to Florida.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay. And there is some precedent in New York for that.
So you want to also, let's touch on this for a second. So you're talking about the mainstream media. You write for the Epoch Times, fantastic
right.
newspaper. I've always said for years, I've been saying this, that the Wall Street Journal and the Epoch Times are the only two papers in America worth paying for. I truly believe that. But
yeah.
The thing is, if you look, like if you read the Wikipedia entry for the Epoch Times, have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
You know, you guys are just evil. Communist bastards, and yet you're the only thing that about the Epoch Times that's the least bit unusual is that they're against communist China. But who the fuck isn't?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Jim, because you know I worked on Capitol Hill for 3 years, then I was in the Reagan campaign in '80, and was a Reagan political appointee for 5 years. Then I became a journalist, and I've been a journalist ever since. But my first reporting job was at the Washington Times, which was owned by another Asian religious figure, Desmond Moon. And to this day, my favorite evaluation of the importance of Reverend Moon to the Washington Times was Wes Pruden, who was the editor, an old newspaper guy from Arkansas. He said, Hey, listen, Reverend Moon is not the first publisher I've worked for who thinks he's God. And that's been my experience as well.
Yeah. Let me get to this. You wrote a story called, hold on, House Budget Chair Jody Arrington leads amicus brief in support of Texas versus the United States.
Yeah.
All right, so probably seeing this online too. There's a lot of people all of a sudden talking about, are we going to have a civil war? Are we going to have a civil war? All right, and my answer to that personally is no, that's bullshit. Except the possible exception is I could see the U.S. federal military lining up against the Texas National Guard at the border. Do you think there's any chance that would ever happen ever?
I tell you, Jim, I pray not. Seriously.
So do I. Yeah. Right.
And not simply because my family is from Texas. And though I was born and raised in Oklahoma, I consider myself an Okie by birth and a Texan by blood.
Uh-huh.
And proud of both. And I know how people in Oklahoma and Texas, and they're very similar. There is a spirit of independence there that even today is marked. I mean, you just feel it when you're there in Texas.
Oh yeah. I go to Texas regularly, and I've always said, it's the only place in America where you can tell it used to be a foreign country.
Yeah, well,
you know,
and it's full of people that, you know, don't mess with Texas.
Yeah,
they mean it.
I know that, and it's the very reason I'm bringing this up. I know that. Yeah,
but I have to give Biden or whoever some credit on this issue, because when Abbott said, we're going to replace whatever wire you guys cut, you know, the expectation, I think, from a lot of people was that there was going to be a confrontation between
right.
the Texas National Guard and the,
yeah.
And the Border Patrol. That didn't happen because, number one, Biden didn't federalize the Texas National Guard, which the Texas National Guard, frankly, if he had tried that, would have, I'm convinced 95% of them would have raised the middle finger.
Right, right.
And said, we ain't doing it, buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
But he also did not force the issue. And, you know, there's a court case going through the court system right now. For whatever reason it was, that was a good decision by Biden because it let things kind of simmer down a bit. There's no question in my mind, especially if you read Arrington's, and it was not just Arrington, there were 50-some other Republican House members that signed that amicus brief. There's no question in my mind that Abbott and Texas are correct. The Constitution assumes that a state has, as a matter of sovereign right, has the power to defend itself if the federal government fails to.
Right, right, exactly.
And that's
right.
The key point.
Yeah, so by extension, I'm kind of glad you brought this up about the fact, you know, trying to give Biden a little credit. As my personal opinion is that the Biden administration has been an absolute disaster with
yeah.
one exception, and that is, and maybe there might be a lot of people watching this that totally disagree with me. At least so far, I don't think they fucked the Ukrainian war up. And also, I could almost even say that about the Israeli-Hamas thing, although they look dangerously close to fucking it up. But
right.
so far, it's, you know, we are not in World War III. And everybody's, and you know, I have, you know, if I have to give the president some credit, that would be where it would be, you know? I mean...
Yeah. Well, it may be that I can't say that I disagree with you. I'm not sure that I agree with you.
Yeah, I know. It's a because the thing is it willful? Did they do, you know, or they just, that's the problem.
Yeah,
I understand,
he
right?
Have,
yeah,
may have actually stumbled into doing the right thing.
Right, that's right. I know, but you're correct. That's right. I know that. I know. All right, so you also wrote another article recently called The Two Biggest Issues That Will Drive Voters to the Ballot Box in 2024. And I'll just, the ticker is they're immigration and abortion, right?
Yeah.
All right, so the Republicans have a problem with this abortion thing. They the public is generally for limited, you know, restricted abortion, it seems like, you know.
Yeah. No, so, I think that's accurate.
How do they handle this?
Well, that was exactly the point of the story. The conventional wisdom, including certainly in the mainstream media and among an awful lot of Republicans in Washington, is the way you handle it is you compromise at some 15 weeks, whatever, and you allow abortions prior to that. And you, in most cases, they will say this needs to be a federal law.
Yeah.
People forget, well, if you make it a federal law, then Congress would then specifically have to tell the Supreme Court your decision in Dobbs does not apply anymore. And Congress can do that.
Yeah.
There is a growing amount of evidence, and I'm forgetting the Mitchell Brown, the Republican pollster who makes this case. There is a tremendous amount of information that, yes, abortion is an emotionally powerful issue for millions and millions of people, but there are millions and millions and millions of people in America for whom the fear of what is happening to our country because of the open border is even more powerful.
Yeah, that's true.
And therefore, number one, Republicans, according to Mitchell Brown, don't panic on abortion. It's not, don't assume that you're going to get beat because you take position A or position B on abortion. There's something more important that people are more concerned about.
Well, it's easy for me to say that because I'm not a pregnant woman. You know, I gotta be honest. I don't think it's that big a deal myself. And also, I mean, I'm not the only person to point this out. You know, so they rescinded Dobbs, but yet really, in reality, virtually nothing changed. I mean, you know, there's some states that are offering abortions and some aren't. And it's all, you got to in between. And that's pretty much the way it was before. And that's, you know, so really nothing's changed at all. But you're talking about the emotional issue and talking about Trump, too. Trump basically being evil, you know.
Yeah.
I find this interesting, and that is I could give you a dozen reasons why I think Biden's a bad president. If you ask the standard liberal in America why what's with Trump, they'll tell you, well, Trump is evil. But if you ask for an example, they really can't come up with any, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I mean, to me, half the populace is completely voting off their hot-headed feelings and not no rationality at all.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, I Trump derangement syndrome among Democrats reminds me of the stereotypical Republican businessman back in the 30s and 40s that hated Franklin Roosevelt. just hated him.
Yeah. Hold it, Mark. You know, I brought this up, and a lot of people have come on the show disagree with me, but I even see that with Clinton. In some ways, I look at Clinton as the Democratic version of Trump. The conservatives hated his guts,
yep.
You know, and they went through that impeachment, and they had no chance of getting that through.
Right.
I mean, people forget this. They didn't even get a majority of the vote in the Senate, let alone the two-thirds, you know.
Don't forget who was the Senate majority leader.
It who was that?
Republican Trent Lott from Mississippi.
Yeah. Okay.
And he told Gingrich, and ahead of time, if you guys go through with this, we are not going to convict him.
But yeah.
The Senate Republicans, they did not want that to go through, and it did.
And so, and you're going back to Roosevelt. I mean, I think you can go back 30, 35 years, and the standard stereotypical Republican has changed markedly since then.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. You're right. Those guys were kind of like they were kind of held close to the fist, you know. It's like we're rich. We're, you know, it's like you guys deal with it. And now it's the stereotype of the parties is basically flipped.
Yeah, it has to a great extent. It's interesting you mentioned that, Jim, because when I was growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, there was a transformation of the typical Republican voter from that kind of Republican stereotype to the middle class, fundamentally middle class Reagan Republican and Reagan Democrat, who were very much, they were the power, if you will, of the center of American politics. Then that changed. Thank you, Clinton, Bush, and Obama, in that period, where government got so much bigger, and they told us so many things that, in retrospect, seemed not to be true, that people stopped trusting the government, stopped trusting the media, stopped trusting a lot of our institutions, and you get this switch where the guy who used to be a middle-class Republican, Reagan Republican, is now a Trump populist.
Yeah.
And the Democrats, they got all the money, you know?
You know what really fascinates me, Mark? You're talking about the mainstream media. All right. Yeah, you and I know they lie through their teeth. A lot of other people know that. But the thing that's really struck me is how the average person has caught onto this. I mean, they are basically being bombarded with propaganda on a daily basis, and yet about half the country's figured out this is all bullshit. And that kind of fascinates me. I mean, like, you know, is that because of the internet? I mean, or I don't know. Why does this happen?
I think in great part it's the internet, because you'll recall back in 2000, 2001, 2002, along in there, when the internet really, social media was really beginning to come into its own, and blogs were especially powerful. And CBS did a story, Dan Rather was the commentator, that alleged, based on an unnamed Texas source, that George W. Bush had, his dad had got him out of going to Vietnam, and he ended up being a pilot. That story was blown out of the water.
Well, Rather lost his job because of this.
Dan Rather lost his job.
Yeah.
Because basically a couple of bloggers, conservative bloggers, did the research that CBS didn't do, or CBS ignored, and figured out that the memo that supposedly was the proof was manufactured. You know, it was fake. And that's why Rather lost his job. It was a fake memo. And CBS took a tremendous hit. And I think that really started a snowball effect with the public in terms of the declining credibility of journalism. And I'm a journalist. I love journalists. I love journalism. I love doing reporting. But I hate what journalism has become.
Well, it is a journalism anymore. It's advocacy now. And not only that,
yeah.
Nobody really does any background checks. Nobody, you know, the thing that amazes, you know, I don't know about you, but like 30 or 40 years ago, you could pick up the New York Times. You'd be lucky if you found one typo in any one edition, you know? Now, there are no proofreaders. Now, it's like the grammar's gone to hell. The spelling's gone to hell. And, you know, and no one seems to care. And I don't know. And this is just one little example, you know, that's about people not doing any research or anything like that. You know?
Well, you know, it's just standards in general have been gutted. I you know, I sit and I watch the White House news, daily news briefings.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been the case under Republicans and under Democrats. With Trump, you didn't get the obvious follow-up question. You got a protest kind of thing, you know? With Biden, you don't get the obvious follow-up question. You get something else, or you get nothing. That journalists don't—they don't think in terms of, okay, how do I ask this question so that I can extract the maximum of useful information that people in the public need to know? They don't do that anymore.
Yeah, Mark,
that's what these people are supposed to do—is get information from government.
I know. And it is amazing how I'm once again, I'm just amazed that the public has caught on like so thoroughly to the fact that basically most of this is bullshit. I mean, you know, I'm going to let you go because I promised you half an hour and I got half an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
We're at half an hour.
I know. I keep track of this stuff. That's part of my job, Mark.
Well, listen, let's do this again sometime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I love talking to you. I really appreciate you doing this. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. That's Mark Tapscott. He's a congressional correspondent for the Epoch Times out of New York City. He's out of Washington, D.C. He's on the Hill pretty much every day. When he was on a few months ago, I asked him, I said, do you ever get depressed from your job? And he said, geez, I wish you hadn't asked me that. I still thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I don't like looking at myself. I'm just a big freaking old brute on TV, but whatever, you know, he looked pretty good. Yeah. And yeah, we're just, yeah, he's, I mentioned that. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to belittle him at all, but, I think he's the only person that comes on the show regularly that's older than I am, but not by much either. Okay. So, anyway, that was great. That was fantastic. I hope you liked it. I did. I actually watched it. Because I did it, but now I watched it. So, yeah, okay. No, that's all right. Got some information there. That's good. All right, so this is a C block here. So if you're new to this, you can still call me up at 563-999-3435. You can send me a text message at 408-458-5088. Let me put that back on the screen because I didn't want that I didn't want you to call in while Mark was talking. I mean, this was pre-recorded. So normally, if it's not pre-recorded, we love to take your phone calls if you want to have questions for the guests. But that was not the case today. So anyway, this is a C-block, and I usually talk about non-political stuff. Matter of fact, you know, here's the deal. I do not consider this a political show. I don't. I was listening to Sean Hannity in the car this afternoon. You know, and he's talking about the fact that, you know, he says, I do a political show, but some other people don't. I don't consider this a political show, even though we do talk about politics. I mean, there was a 30-minute interview there basically about politics, right? Okay. But the thing is, I like to talk, if you watch this before, I like to talk about a whole bunch of stuff. I got a friend of mine who says you have too many people on talking about Bigfoot. We do. We have a lot of Bigfoot people on. Larry Newman comes on regularly. Stan Gordon, one of the premier Bigfoot investigators in the United States, he came on. We had the guy who was named the Bigfoot Hunter of the Year by the Bigfoot Times. He came on. That was Mark Marcel. Fantastic interview. He's a great. So, we talk about stuff other than politics. Matter of fact, I got too many interests. That's my problem. So in the C block here, I usually talk about scientific or paranormal related stuff. I got three things today. First of all, you might have heard this for the first time in 52 years. That would be Americans, landed a craft on the moon today. It's unmanned. And here's the real thing about this. It was done commercially. It was not done by the government. This is not NASA. The name of the company is Intuitive Machines. They landed a spacecraft on the moon. And the spacecraft is called the Odysseus probe. Do I have that pronounced right? I can't. At any rate, it landed about 5:30 Eastern time, or 6:30, I think. It's 6:30 Eastern time, 5:30 Central time. And it almost crashed, but it didn't. It didn't. It did make it. Apparently, they lost just before it touched down. They lost contact with it, communication. But this spacecraft was designed to land without any input. It was designed, so it took over on its own, and it did land, and it took them a little while to actually regain contact with it. But yeah, it's up and working. So the first successful landing on the moon by any American in 52 years. So now, you know, they want to start sending people up. The goal right now is that they're going to put a colony up there. They're going to send people up there and start building shit in 2026, 2 years from now. Now, we should be able to do that. You know, I mean, God, we went the last time we went, the last time we were on the moon was Apollo 17 in 1972. That was the last Apollo mission. Now, you have to understand this. I talked about this a few nights ago. We went to the moon basically without computers. There was a quote-unquote a computer on the Apollo spacecraft. It was basically a calculator. It had 2K of memory. All it basically could do was add and subtract, multiply, and divide. That was what they had called a computer. The people on the ground, slide rules. Now, I still remember slide rules. I still remember using them. It's crazy shit. It really is. Because the thing about slide rules, they're really cool, but they're also highly inaccurate is not the right word. They're imprecise. That's what they are. So now we have real computers. So we should be able to do this. I have a friend of mine who works at NASA who's told me point blank, he said, we can't do this anymore. This place has become so bureaucratic. He actually told me that. So I don't know. But they're gonna do it. And the idea is they want to put a base on the moon to help them get to Mars. Okay, fine. You know, and we're flying rockets. It's like, I mean, conquer the cosmos with rockets. I mean, that's not going to happen. All right, I'm going to jump ahead here to a story. My friend Chad Shaw, who's on the show regularly, he's the weekend editor for HotAir.com, a Salem Media property. But his role at Salem, he's a weekend editor for Hot Air. And for the entire corporation, he's also the science and UFO guy. So, Jazz, we found each other. I call him my brother from another mother because that's basically I talk about politics and UFOs. That's what we do here. And so him and I had very similar paths. You know, I've been on the UFO beat for 30 years. I've been telling anybody for the last 30 years that we have crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. And then in December 2017, they write about that in the New York Times. And everyone says, Jim, how did you know? And the thing is, here's the deal, folks. Here's how I knew. Government documents. And okay, well, how come no one else knew? I don't know. I certainly don't know why the press never reported on this. I mean, the evidence is just absolutely it stinks to high heaven. There's hundreds of government documents that talk about crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. I shouldn't say that. Let me be precise here. They talk about crashed UFOs. I know of only one single document in the public domain that actually talks about aliens, and that's on the FBI website in their archive. There's a memo from, I think, 1952 or 53. Some guy on the field somewhere sent a memo back to the Home Office, and the memo basically says it's a four-page memo, and it basically says, well, we got this crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft and these three dead aliens. What do you want us to do with them? That's basically what the memo is. And for years, it's the single most read thing on their entire website. There's like a million documents there. This is the single most read one. And people, say, Well, my God, isn't that proof? And that's proof that the aliens exist. And the FBI says, oh, no, it was just a whole misunderstanding. There was no aliens. There was no crashed spacecraft. It was all bullshit. And that's bullshit. Come on. Who sent the memo? What did they, it's like the thing at Roswell. All right. So I got to be honest with you. There's a possibility the thing that crashed at Roswell was not a crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. Everyone just assumes that, but there's a possibility it wasn't. But we know something for sure. Something crashed. That's what we know that absolutely for certain. And here's another thing we know for certain from circumstantial evidence. It was not a weather balloon because the amount of debris from that crash was way, way more than even... They're talking about these Project Mogul weather balloons that were like 17 stories tall or whatever it was. Doesn't matter. They're still Mylar balloons. It doesn't matter how many you pile up. It's like you don't get that much debris, you know? So that's bullshit. We know the government lied. The other thing is we know the government lied because they sent the press release out. The Roswell airfield sent the press release out saying they had the crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. The next day, they sent another press release out saying, oh, we made a mistake. It's just a weather balloon. No, well, something crashed, but it's not a weather balloon, for sure. So why did I bring that up? I brought that up just to talk about the fact that, yeah, the government did lie for sure. But no, but there is a possibility it was some top secret project they still don't want to talk about, whatever. Okay, so the reason I'm bringing all that stuff up is we have, like I said, the only thing I've ever known for years is that we have at least 6 and probably 9 or more crashed extraterrestrial spacecraft. We have them. Now, whether the government's figured out how they work, that's the problem. And Jazz and I, the last time Jazz was on, we talked about this. There's two distinct schools of thought on this. One is that they have reverse engineered the shit and they are flying around the solar system and they're not telling us all. That's the one story. The other story is that no, they haven't been able to figure it out at all and they're too embarrassed to tell anybody. That's the other story. And I don't know which one's true. I do know this, you know, those Tic Tac things they were talking about that in the New York Times that everybody was talking about flying around the Nimitz and the Teddy Roosevelt and the aircraft carriers and all that sort of stuff. I think there's a good chance, I'd even say a probability, that those are actually ours. And we're saying, well, they couldn't do that because it's like they're flying against the military is flying against itself. No, the military would do that. Because you got to understand, these are highly, highly secret black projects. So most of the people in the military don't even know about them. People say the military would never do that. You're putting naval personnel at risk by flying shit around that they don't understand. The black projects, that's exactly what they would do. They want to see if anybody in the Navy is going to figure it out. So it's very unusual. I don't know what the answer to that. But then again, here's another thing. So, you know, I can sit here and say, well, you know, they won't say they're extraterrestrial spacecraft. They just call them UFOs or UAPs or whatever the hell they come up with now. But if Christopher Mellon, who was the deputy secretary of defense, I can't remember, second deputy, it's like one of those undersecretary things, you know. Anyway, he did that. And he wrote an article about a year and a half ago, and I can't remember it was for a defense publication, if I'm right. And the article said, well, you know, here's the problem. No one in the government wants to say the A word, and the A word is aliens. Nobody wants to say it, and he's right. Nobody does. The government, there's another two schools of thought on that, too, that it's been presumed by people who study this that for years there's been a huge struggle within the Pentagon of whether they should tell the public about this or not. And you're thinking, well, why wouldn't they want to tell the public? Well, here's a couple of reasons. One, they're afraid people will panic. You know, they're still, you know, Jazz and I kind of disagree on this, thinks it's not that big a deal anymore. My thing is, yeah, maybe it's not for Americans, but for the rest of the world, because you have to understand, I mean, if they tell Americans, we're telling everybody, there's a lot of people across the planet who might really freak out. There's people who cannot handle this. I mean, you go back to 1938, the War of the Worlds broadcast, you know, now that's been blown out of proportion, the amount of panic that happened, but there was panic, especially on the East Coast. I don't know if you know the story, War of the Worlds, but that actually happens in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, all hell broke loose in northern New Jersey. People were literally running for the exits, you know. So it was not that bad across the rest of the country, but it did happen, you know. And there's a lot of people who think, I mean, Orson Welles never addressed this while he was alive. There's a lot of people who think that the government asked or paid him to do that broadcast just to see if they wanted to see what would happen. That's been the conjecture, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's true. So there's that. On the other hand, this is another way to look at this too. By keeping this secret for this long, there's an enormous number of people have broken the law. And there's people, you know, people, I hear this from my friends all the time. No one could keep a secret that long. That's bullshit. You know, if you're going to be threatened with 30 years in prison for talking, people do not talk. Case in point, the Manhattan Project, the freaking atomic bomb we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, 110,000 people were involved in the manufacture of that. Not a single one of them squealed. Not one. Now, you have to understand, if we're going to be credit where credit's due here, most of those people didn't know exactly what they were working on. They didn't. But some of them did. And no, nobody told anybody. There wasn't even people, you know, even picked up some weird conversation at a bar. Even that didn't happen. Yeah, you know why? Because you're going to go to prison for 30 years if you do it. You know, it's a very, very good incentive to shut the fuck up. You know, it's easy not to talk. I mean, you know, I'm not going to tell you what's going on. You know, it's very simple. I have a friend of mine, and he's passed, unfortunately, now, but he had a top secret security clearance with the U.S. military, with the Pentagon. His job was, he was a writer, and his job was to take highly complex scientific projects and boil them down into, like, regular, you know, human speak so that the generals, the non-scientists, could understand what was going on. That was his job. First of all, he gave me a really good example. He said that one day, and he lived here in Minneapolis. He flew to Washington regularly, but he lived here. He said one day they sent a plane to pick him up. They took him, I think he said it was in Delaware. I can't remember. They flew him out to the middle of a cornfield, and he drove out there in a limousine, and another army general drove out so they could have a conversation because they wanted to make absolutely certain that the conversation was not bugged. And they said the only way they could do that is to do it out, literally outside. So they drove him to the middle of a cornfield in the middle of nowhere so he could talk to this general outside of the car. The other thing he told me, he said, Jim, you would not believe the shit the military's doing. I just said UFOs, and he said, no, way worse. I don't know what that is. But he told me this, you know, he had one of these security oaths too. He said, if he told me what he knew and they found out, they'd kill him. That's what he told me. Now, they don't advertise the fact they're going to kill people, but he said, yeah, they'd kill me. Yeah, if I told you. And they knew, and they found out. And yeah, so, I mean, who knows? But this is the thing that's going on right now. So the thing is, we have these, you know, the article that Jazz wrote is called More Evidence the Pentagon Has Always Lied About UFOs. I'm going to put this on our blog this weekend. It's on mysteriousuniverse.org, which is a fascinating website. I have subscription to it. I get a lot of the paranormal news I use here on the show on that website. And he's talking about something called the Indiana incident, which happened on October 3rd, 1958. And what it was a passenger train going through Indiana, some small town. I can't remember what it was called, Mono or something like that. And this train was followed for about an hour by four flying discs. And he said that it was a passenger train, but it was empty. There were no passengers on it. So it was just the crew of six people. And the conductor and the head engineer, the pilot of the train, they had flashlights, and they were flashing their flashlights at these UFOs. And he said it was obvious that the UFOs were responding to the flashes. He said it was very obvious these things were intelligently controlled. And it went on for an hour, and because of there were only six people involved, but they're all highly credible. Remember, one of the guys was a longtime pilot in the military. Like, he'd been flying for 30 years or something like that. Anyway, Jazz's point here is that this never really got written up. It actually did get filed to Project Blue Book, but either they lost the file. He said he found it, actually, in some Pentagon archive. It was stuffed in a bunch of other stuff. He said a lot of these files are very disorganized. He thinks that they deliberately buried it, but based on what I read from it, it could have been accidental. You know, I don't know. But the thing is, you know, it's not accidental. They seem to lose all the really good shit. That seems to want to, up till recently anyway. Now they actually have a system in place where pilots and military personnel can actually report UFOs. It's not for the public. People thought when they did this, they thought it was a public website. It is. It's not for the public, but it is for military personnel. They have a website set up now where you can report a UFO sighting. I was going to say one more thing. I can't remember what it was. At any rate. And finally, Okay, I'm going to bring this up tonight, too. This is a really interesting thing. They have invented water batteries. So now, okay, this is the way this works. That is, most batteries, like in a Tesla, so you have to understand when they started building Teslas, and they're still doing this, there's not one giant battery in the Tesla. The Tesla is filled, completely stuffed to the brims, even like in the window struts everywhere with standard bullshit lithium batteries, hundreds of them. That's the way they, and they're all wired in series, and that's how they get this to work, right? Okay, so those batteries are lithium, and what happens is there's lithium, and they put some sort of gel or liquid in them, if I'm right. But because of that, they have a tendency to get really hot, and they can even explode or melt, you know. But so what they've done, and this sounds amazing, but it's really true. I guess it's really true. They have replaced the lithium with plain, ordinary H2O water. Their batteries are run off water. Now, the thing is, they don't work very good yet, but they said that the path to perfecting this is really, really clear-cut, and they know what they're going to do. And they said in a few years' time, they're going to have these batteries will work just as well as lithium batteries will. And this will be a total game changer because lithium is extremely hard to mine. It's rare. You know, they got a bunch of Malaysian children in the desert out in Africa working in these mines for like 50 cents an hour. I mean, it's brutal. It's terrible. It's almost slavery, you know, to get this lithium. And the Chinese own some of these mines, and they own the lithium. We're buying it from them, essentially our enemy. If they can get this to work, my God, I mean, this is going to be amazing. Just incredible. I just realized the reason I started talking about the whole UFO thing about it is going to the moon. So So the thing is, you know, if they figured out, I've said this before, we actually know theoretically how to fly faster than the speed of light. We know that. Why aren't we doing it? It takes a ridiculous, unbelievable amount of energy. Matter of fact, it would take more, for a small spacecraft, it would take more electricity than is generated on the entire Earth. It's really amazing. But how do they do that? Well, you're saying, well, how does a bunch of gray aliens who are 10,000 years ahead of us, how do they figure this out? Bob Lazar, and you can go and look, if you search the YouTube for Bob Lazar, you'll find this. In 1992, in 1989, he said he was working on crashed spacecraft at Area 51. It completely blew the thing open. You have to understand that before Bob Lazar, nobody even knew what Area 51 was. So it's not just that he said he worked there. He basically revealed the whole existence of that place to the public. In 92, he did basically a lecture for the camera. I don't think there's an audience there. I've seen it. It's still on standard def. It's really, you know, bad bullshit picture, 4x3. But he filmed this lecture on how, based on his work on these spacecraft, how they work. Now, the interesting thing about this is that, well, first of all, Lazar claims to be a trained physicist. But there's no record of him attending any of the schools he said he attended. Now, that said, George Knapp, the investigator from the TV station KLAS in Las Vegas, he said that even though that's true, there's no record of him attending. He said he found a whole bunch of people who said they went to school with Bob Lazar in the physics department, a whole bunch of them. So, this seems to be a common process. That is, if the government wants to discredit you, one of the first things they'll do is wipe your academic record. I have no idea how they do this. I mean, I suppose it's pretty simple. You call up, you bribe a couple people in the office. I don't know. You know, just delete this, you know, and we'll give you $10,000. Okay, fine. How many people want to do that? You know, and you wouldn't even know the importance of what you're doing. All you have to do is delete a file. Okay, he has no academic record anymore. But, and also, the other thing is, in this lecture, in this demonstration he does, there's a whole bunch of stuff he did that in 1992 made no sense to the physics community. He was basically mocked. He was laughed for this. They said, this is all bullshit. One of the things he said, is he said that these spacecraft were powered by element 115. That's the number on the periodic chart. And in 1992, element 115 did not exist. The periodic chart did not go up that high. But there's another thing about element 115. If you go up the periodic chart table of elements, the farther up you go in the numbers, and the numbers, I got to remember this, the numbers correspond to the number of protons in the element, if I'm right. Is it protons or neutrons? I can't remember. But anyway, yeah, it's protons, I think. So in other words, element 115 is 115 protons in the nucleus. That's the way that works. As a general rule, if you go up the periodic chart, the elements become more and more unstable. But he said in 1992, when we did not even know what element 115 was, he said that element 115 was a exception to that. He said it was stable, where all the other stuff around it on the chart wasn't. Now, but we don't even know what was around it yet. I can't remember where in 1992 where the chart stopped. Anyway, in 2006 we discovered element 115. It's called muscovium now, and amazingly, it had exactly precisely the properties that Balthazar said it would. And that's weird because first of all, they're unorthodox. So it's like you wouldn't pull that out of your butt and just say that shit, you know. It's like, so there's that, you know. And so Bob Lazar says that these spacecraft were powered by basically the engine or the propulsion system was about the size of a washing machine. And he said what it was is they bombarded element 115 with electrons to turn it into element 116. And then with element 116, they bombarded that with antimatter. Now, if you think atomic and nuclear weapons are powerful, it's literally, he said, they were literally only exploding one molecule at a time by pairing it up with antimatter. And this thing, this little device, relatively little, the size of a washing machine or a large microwave oven, he said, it was perfectly constructed to contain this reaction. And you could blow up, you know, the whole solar system with a reaction like this. I mean, this is really, really powerful shit. But that's how they generated the electricity to fly these spacecraft. That's how they did it. But, you know, you don't want to make a mistake with that crap. We did a story on here a couple weeks ago about the fact that there's a theory in quantum physics that there's an unlimited number of universes, and at any moment you can switch from one to the other. That's the theory. And matter of fact, that's the theory about, you know, I got a friend of mine who says we had somebody on here talking about Bigfoot being able to change planes, and I've never heard the end of it. But that's the way the theory works. But there are people now who think that at the CERN collider, the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, which is the largest particle collider on the planet. And why are they colliding molecules? Well, because when they hit each other and they break apart, we get to see what's going on. That's the way that works. There's people who think that by running the collider with certain elements or molecules in it, that we have actually altered the space-time continuum. Like not just for Earth, like the entire universe. But it's just crazy shit. But if you know anything about quantum physics is nuts. It makes no sense at all. And this is the new frontier of science. It is. But it's still been proven at this point. Quantum physics is real. You know, so I don't know. I could talk about this forever, and I probably shouldn't. We're off for the rest of the week. We don't do Fridays here, so we're coming back on Monday. And on Monday, our month in review panel, I know Tim Conaway, Don Zor are going to be here for sure. I'm going to try to, Larry Newman can't make it. We're going to try to rope one other person into it, maybe not, whatever. And then I'm taking Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, essentially the rest of the week off. So I this is a one-man operation. I got work got to do. This is my retirement job. Anyway, I want to thank you folks for watching. It's been very gratifying. We have this week we busted 2,000 followers on Rumble, and considering the fact we've only been doing this for 6 months, that's pretty damn good. It's like we have several shows on Rumble, quite a few that have had several thousand people watching. The interview I did with Patrick Moore, the climatologist, is the single most watched show of the series this far. And if you're interested in watching any one of them, at least for the content, I mean, we're good at screwing around too. The Halloween episode was pretty funny. So we're all wearing ridiculous costumes and shit. You know, it's like, well, whatever. But anyway, if you want to watch any one show, I would maybe recommend that one. Far the most watched one, I think about 5,000 people watched it so far. So, and I know that's, you know, all right, that's not Joe Rogan numbers, but like I said, we started this with absolutely no publicity, anything whatsoever. So all things considered, so far so good. I like doing it. I hope you like watching. I'll see you on Monday. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you, wherever you are. Have a nice weekend.